From the Figure Four Online Studios in beautiful Bothell, Washington, exclusively at WrestlingObserver.com, you're listening to The Brian and Vinny Show with your hosts, Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny V.
Show everybody, it is June 10, 2014, figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com, and here we are with our Tuesday show. We've got Vinny here in studio. Craig is not here. He is continuing his journey, but he will return to us at some point next week. Maybe Sunday, maybe not. I don't know when he's going to be here. Sunday or Tuesday? I guess Sunday doesn't have to be here because Sunday, last I checked, is the TNA pay-per-view, which we will not be watching. But we will still do a show. I don't know what we'll talk about. The usual stuff, I guess. So that is the plan. Got that, Vinny?
Yes.
I'm making sure you're alive over there.
I don't want to interrupt you.
Well, if you didn't want to interrupt me, all I'd do is talk the whole time.
Great. Everyone wins.
All right. Well, I got something to talk about, everybody. It is called The Death of WCW. I don't know if you've heard, everybody, but this book is being reissued. It is expanded. It is updated. It's got new material. I personally would buy this book just for my own chapter on the year 2000 and the new added chapter chronicling the rise and fall of TNA. Actually, I should just say the continual fall of TNA. I don't even know if you can count a fall. It started at sea level and has remained there. But the original book was, I think, 280 pages or something like that. And the new book is about 480. It is 40% bigger. There are new chapters. There is a lot of stuff. I don't know if you guys remember this, but around 2002, 2003, there were not a lot of wrestling books. Now there's a million of them. But when we were working on Death of WCW, there were I don't want to say there were very few. Certainly fewer than there are now. And there was a feeling around the time of Foley's book, why would anyone write a book about wrestling? Because everybody knows that wrestling fans cannot read. And so when we signed the contract for Death of WCW, I believe our word limit was 80,000 words, which is approximately, that's less than three observers. Yeah.
Yes.
Less than three observers that we had to write this book on the rise and fall of WCW. So after a great deal of negotiation, I believe we managed to increase the word limit to about 120,000 words, I think is what we ended up getting in the end. And so I had to cut out probably about 100,000 words from our original manuscript. And so this book, which is coming out in October, all of that has been put back in. For those of you that were so infuriated that there was no mention of the NWO Red and Black in the first book that did end up on the cutting room floor, now you can read about the NWO Red and Black to your heart's content. As well as all of the new chapters, Dave has written a brand new foreword here in 2014. So it's going to be awesome. And as some of you are well aware, I nearly flipped my lid when I worked so goddamn hard on this book. This book won the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Best Book Award in 2005, which when you think about it, kind of sounds like, well, that's not really fair. But you got to remember that in 2005, we had not merged yet, and it is fan voting. It is the readership of the Observer. So it won Best Book, and then a little while later, I didn't know when Vince Russo's book came out, but when I found out that Vince Russo got a hard copy, they made a hardcover edition of Vince Russo's book, I just couldn't even believe it. I was like, I know it's Vince Russo. I know that he's like a pretty famous name in wrestling, but you guys know that you're not going to sell all that many Vince Russo books. There's no way that Vince Russo's book is outselling Death of WCW, which, by the way, I don't think it even came close. I don't know for sure, but that's certainly the impression that I've gotten. And this guy got a hardcover, and I couldn't get a hardcover. I was infuriated. Some of you may remember from back in the day. Well, guess what? Hardcover, Death of WCW. There is a, I don't know how limited, but they're doing a limited edition. So, long story short, everybody, this is now available for pre-order. All you have to do is go to WrestlingObserver.com. You can scroll down on the front page. There's a Death of WCW graphic. Click on that. It is all over the secondary pages. You click on any story, it's up there in the top left-hand corner. It is impossible to miss. It'll take you to Amazon where you can order the hardcover edition of the book. And it's funny, I mentioned this on Twitter today, and I wrote a giant article on the front page, and I'm talking about it now. And I made it very clear in every single place that the book is available in hardcover, softcover, and a Kindle version. And despite making this as abundantly clear as possible, I cannot tell you how many people today have continued to ask me if it's available on the Kindle. Yes, it is available on the Kindle. Go to Amazon, type in Death of WCW, and you can pre-order the Kindle version. So everybody go up there and order right now. And I just sent Vinny packing out of this room. What's going on out there? What's happening? This is in the middle of an epic, my best sales pitch of all time. And Vinny just walked off in the middle of it.
Fortunately, the book is so great, everyone will buy it anyway. No, they caught the door opening out of the corner of my eye. And
I see.
I thought I had forgotten to close it, and the cats are coming in.
So I see.
Jumped up to stop them, and then it was your wife.
I see. Well, she got home early. That's great.
She's saying hello.
Well, hello!
So that's all that happened.
If she's listening, please share my post on Facebook. Listen, everybody. I don't want to sound like I'm a greedy man, but I have a couple of goals with this book. I really would like this book to make the New York Times bestseller list. I don't know how hard or easy it is, but I know a lot of people have to buy the book. I think that that would be really cool. So that is why I'm asking you politely to please purchase. And I have another goal. And keep in mind, as an author, I'm not getting rich off this book, everybody. I know it says the hardcover is $18.96. I don't make $18.96 off this book. In fact, if you knew how much money I made for each copy of this book, you would ask me why I bothered to write it, quite frankly. But I would like the book to gross more money than WCW was sold for.
Mm.
Which I can tell you, the book has sold nearly 50,000 copies. And at about $15 on average per copy, it has grossed something like $700,000.
And what was WCW sold for?
$2.5 million. So we're a ways away, but believe me, it is not impossible that someday, before I die, the Death of WCW could gross more money than WCW was sold for. I think that that would be an amazing eulogy to this company in a lot of ways. So that's why I'm also asking you to buy 4 or 5 copies.
Mm.
And again, as I note, the $700,000, I'm not making this money. Okay, a lot of this money goes to the publisher. Obviously, my royalties are split with RD. So not making $1 million off of this book, but I'd like the book to gross that kind of money. So go ahead and check it out, everybody. And more so than anything else, it's a great book. 4 stars on Amazon, over 100 reviews. So you cannot go wrong. And if you want a signed copy, I will have a very, very, very limited number that I can sign. So don't count on it. Your best bet is to buy it, and I will be at WrestleManias. I will be at the convention. I'll be all over the place. I've had many people run into me with their book, and I've signed it for them. So I'd rather you did that than wait around, because if you wait around, I know some people today want to copy the old one. I don't have any. I don't think I have one copy of my own book in this house. So I wouldn't wait around hoping to get a copy that way. So just head up to Amazon and buy it, everybody. And that is my plug. I want to thank everybody in advance. I know a lot of people pre-ordered it today. So a huge thank you to all of you. And I will keep you updated with the status. The book has already made more than TNA has in its entire existence. So that right there.
It's made a profit, right?
It has made a profit, yeah. A rather healthy profit. I don't want to talk about NXT yet. I want to save that for the end of the show. But I got to say that I was watching NXT. This show is like so much better than Impact. It's not even funny. In every conceivable way, it's astonishing the difference between these two programs. I am so happy that we're not watching Impact this week. I am so happy we're watching NXT instead. It's just, I just don't know how they went so wrong. I mean, not to toot my own horn, but there's a fucking book right here telling you what not to do. And that's all they've done for the past 12 years. We'll get to that. Let's start with Raw here.
Monday Night Raw. Show opened with Triple H and Stephanie coming out for a promo. They were in a great mood, full of joy. Had a video from Dr. Joe Maroon, a man who performed Daniel Bryan's neck surgery. They put his full credentials on screen to make this look as legit as possible. And the doctor announced that Bryan would not be cleared to wrestle at Money in the Bank, and he would be reevaluated in a month. So, this of course meant that Bryan had to be stripped of the title. Helmsley announced this with great joy and a little fake sympathy, fake sadness. They said this proved that, first of all, they said Bryan had not returned their calls, but they wished him the best. They also wished the best to his ungrateful wife, Brie, who had quit for nothing. What a shrewd businesswoman, they said. Announced a ladder match for the vacant championship at the pay-per-view. Del Rio was in because he won a qualifier on SmackDown. Randy Orton is in because, and I quote, he is who he is.
Yes.
This explains their booking for the past decade.
It's exactly. I love that line. I thought it was great. Not even attempting to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, remember, this is the man speaking here is the one who once was awarded a world title just because he deserved it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, he could have done that. He could have just gave the title to
just
Randy.
Give it back to Randy. Oh, man, I hadn't thought of that until right now. They actually could have done that. So they buried Bryan for a while, talked about how this proved they were right. He was not championship material after all. And somehow this segued into them talking about Seth Rollins. They talked about how he had turned on the Shield. Hunter booked Roman Reigns and Dean Ambrose and a mystery partner against the Wyatts for tonight. He pointed out that Reigns and Ambrose had spent the past 18 months pissing off everyone in the entire company, so they had good luck finding a partner. And that was it. This only went about 10 minutes total, including the entrances and the video recap, so I was totally fine with this.
There's a poll here on the front page, or there was yesterday. Who should be the next WWE champion? And the options are Lesnar, Rollins, Cesaro, Punk, Wyatt, Cena, Reigns, Barrett, Hunter, Orton, Sheamus, and Dean Ambrose. Who would be your pick, Vinny?
That was a long list of names. I guess Cesaro. I'll say that off the top of my head.
Cesaro?
Putting exactly 1 second of thought into it.
Well, you should have thought about it more. I have got the greatest scenario if I ran this company. You have a Money in the Bank match, and you have... By the way, why was Punk even an option?
I have no idea.
So you've got this...
Frank, can I just vote who won't be an option?
Punk?
Yes.
So you've got this Money in the Bank match. I think that you should put Rollins, Cesaro, Wyatt, Cena, Reigns, Orton, Sheamus, put all these guys in there. And as the match is going on, all of a sudden, Brock Lesnar's music hits. And he goes out of the ring, and he absolutely beats the shit out of every last single person in that ring. He F5s everybody all over the land. He destroys all of the ladders over his knee. Perhaps he eats some tables. He just complete, wanton, unrelenting destruction. And then when there are nothing but bodies strewn everywhere, Brock Lesnar proclaims, "I'm not climbing this ladder. You lower those belts to me." And when they say no, he goes, "Lower those fucking belts!" And they lower the belts down into his hands, and Brock Lesnar is the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. And he goes on a reign of absolute destruction. He destroys everybody in the main event of Raw every week. Like, you've got seven guys in the Money in the Bank match. So every last single one of them goes up against Brock for seven straight weeks, and he destroys every last single one of them. And of course, you build up to his big challenge will be at SummerSlam when Daniel Bryan returns. And then, of course, they have a great match. Daniel Bryan beats him when the title's back. And that's it. You got 2 months of Brock Lesnar. Use 8 dates right there. I think this would be the greatest summer in the history of WWE.
Well, anything that involves Brock Lesnar killing people is fun. That's for sure. You know, the only thing I can, and you know better than I, but can they get Brock for that much time?
Dude, they can do whatever they want.
Will Brock go?
He is scheduled for 24 dates a year starting at WrestleMania. Mm. So he had WrestleMania, and I don't recall him working Extreme Rules. So that means he's got 23 days left.
All right. Yeah.
So one pay-per-view, 8 Raws, and another pay-per-view is 10 dates.
Indeed.
That leaves 12 dates leading up to WrestleMania.
Sure.
They could easily do this.
All right. Yeah, that works. I'm completely down with that. We had another Money in the Bank qualifier, Sheamus versus Wade Barrett. I have said many times that I would never grow tired of this feud. But when these two men came out to wrestle, even I was like, again? And then 10 minutes later, I was reminded, I will never grow tired of this feud.
This match. I heard from someone, maybe they will say their piece later, who did not like this match at all. Maybe I shouldn't say they didn't like the match at all. I'll actually read what they said about this match here. I hated Sheamus and Barrett. It was a bunch of moves followed by them kicking out of more moves. And Sheamus takes a headbutt, 10 kicks to the head, and 2 shots to the post to no sell it at all and just hit his finish. That was this person's review.
I would disagree that he no sold it at all. It was his last breath. If Wade had ducked this kick, Sheamus would have collapsed and turned to dust. It was his last breath of hope, and he nailed this kick and got the pin and won with his desperation tactic. So that person is factually wrong. This match was awesome. Crowd loved it. It was into both guys. We talked about the finish, so that's that, and Sheamus won. This feud is awesome.
Listen, I thought this match was really good. If it were just a match on Raw, then yeah, maybe you could say they kicked out of too many moves, whatever your criticisms might be. But this was a Money in the Bank qualifier, where in this Money in the Bank match, the winner is going to be the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. This belt is supposed to be the most important thing in the company. It's all anybody is supposed to want, well, these two belts. And therefore, these guys should, in fact, be trying to kill themselves to earn a shot in this match. Now, granted, that's not really how it is in the WWE universe, but that's how it should be. So I have no problem with these guys fighting their asses off to get a shot at this title. And that means kicking out of finishes.
Yes, it does. And really, what finishes do they kick out of? They kicked out of the White Noise, they kicked out of Wasteland. These are not finishes anymore.
I see.
Yeah. Wyatt's cut a promo on the big screen. Essentially, they gloated that they were still alive and the Shield was dead. Lana came out. I have seen every Lana promo ever, so I was getting ready to skip this.
Oh, what the hell's wrong with you?
I know she's an attractive lady.
You're an idiot.
I'm on my computer all day. I can see attractive ladies whenever I want to.
You're on your computer too much then if you're ready to skip past Lana.
So she came out. Before I could hit the button, I heard her describe President Obama as a girly man. I thought, all right, I'll watch this. So I don't know how it's possible. Had you seen these clips before?
I didn't actually see the clips, but I was aware that the clips had been, that were on, they were online.
I had never seen nor heard of this.
It's very recent, like in the last few days.
As noted, I'm on my computer a lot. How could I not have heard nor seen or anything about this link? They showed President Obama doing the dweebiest workout of all time. He was like, it looked bad. I laughed my ass off. And then, the perfect segue, here's Vladimir Putin throwing men to the ground and riding horses with no shirt on. This is fabulous. Absolutely magnificent.
Dave hated this, that they did this to President Obama.
You thought it was disrespectful?
Yes.
Well,
you know, I do have to say this, though. Listen, the guy wasn't lifting heavy weights. And he was doing walking lunges and shoulder presses or something like that. But
he's
at the end of the day,
like bent over rows or something.
You know what? We got a president who's in shape and exercises.
Actually, our last two were actually in...
I don't give a shit what he's doing.
Yes.
It's not like we've got Grover Cleveland.
President Obama's not going to die in a bathtub anytime soon.
No.
Yeah.
Glad the guy's working out.
Yes.
What the hell do you guys want?
Apparently, you want Putin.
You want the president of the free world to be underneath 400 pounds on the bench? I don't!
Yeah, I can see how that would be something could go wrong there. That's a good point. So anyway, He squashed Zach Ryder. Axelback versus Goldust in Truth. Truth is this week's handpicked partner for Goldust by Cody Rhodes. It was short. It was sloppy. The crowd wanted Lesnar, and Axel pinned Goldust with the schoolboy. Layla was in makeup burying Summer Rae when Summer arrived and poured milk on her.
She sure did.
And then she put makeup on her, and she left, and Layla was weeping. And I don't know if I've just been watching wrestling for too long or just watching so much of it lately, but I watched that and thought, I should be hating this. But I don't. I'm just indifferent to it now.
You've been on the computer way too much.
Did you hate it then?
No.
Okay.
It just was what everyone thought it was.
There you go. All right. 3MB, we're in the ring for a promo.
And for those of you that can't figure that out, She had a white liquid dripping all over her face. Sometimes I'm baffled what people can't figure out when I try to make it as simple as possible.
3MB, we're in the ring for a promo.
And don't make me get more specific.
Shield came out very quickly. Only two of them, but the same entrance, same music, same gear. There were still only two of them and three of 3MB, so the fight was even for a little bit. But then the Shield eventually won. Heath tried to flee. Roman Reigns speared him on the stage, and a very rare production gaffe in WWE where they had a shot of the empty ring as the spear was going on. Fortunately, they showed it on replay. Then they cut a promo. Ambrose addressed Rollins, said that for all their success, Rollins has always been a cancer in the group. He began to specifically, in great graphic detail, describe how he was going to destroy Seth Rollins' face and which parts of Seth's face would end up where they were not supposed to be. And then Reigns said Rollins is only part of the problem. He was going to turn Randy Orton from the face of the company to the ass of the company.
Holy fuck.
That's what he said.
Whoever wrote that line, like, should be fired immediately and not sooner.
Yeah.
What a stupid line.
Yeah.
Roman Reigns has one job, and that is to look mean and to say a couple of badass lines.
And spear the fuck out of people.
And saying that Randy Orton is going to go from being the face of the company to the ass of the company. Who could even write that down?
I don't know.
And think it would not sound stupid coming from Roman Reigns.
Yeah. So he also vowed to finish Triple H. And one horrible line aside, this whole segment was to prove that the Shield were still standing strong and would not be left behind as Rollins became a star. And I thought it was a great success.
I realize that WWE nowadays, you've got to be able to do, as we were talking about on Monday, a soliloquy. You've got to be an orator to be like a big-time main eventer. But every now and then, you could have a guy who's different. And I think it would be a breath of fresh air on a show where everyone is a fucking orator to just have one guy who comes out and just says, I'm going to kick your ass. That's all he says, and then he just kicks everybody's ass. I promise you this would get over without oration. Is that a word?
Should be.
Oratory?
Usos versus Fandango and Damian Sandow. First of all, you had Layla out there still covered in milk and makeup. And then out came Damien Sandow. I'm not sure why or where they found this, but he was dressed in a flesh-colored cat suit doing ribbon dancing. This was greatly disturbing. So I couldn't believe they put him on TV like this, but for some reason, the live crowd loved him. He did a lot of wacky fake ballet. And then the Usos won the match with a top rope splash. A bizarre segment.
Well, he's someone new every week.
I guess.
I don't know why he was a dancer here. But he was.
What's wrong with just letting him be Damien Sandow?
Well, they tried that.
He's just losing every week anyway. Who cares?
They want something different.
They want a different guy to lose every week?
I guess so.
Bo Dallas versus Xavier Woods. Here are my entire notes. Crowd got bored and chanted for CM Punk. Bo won with a Bodog.
They still haven't changed the name of that thing yet.
I don't think they're going to.
The Bodog.
Mm-hmm. Paul Heyman got a promo. He hyped up Brock Lesnar and his career at the University of Minnesota. The crowd, of course, cheered. So Heyman, for all he was worth, teased a Lesnar appearance and then announced, here he is, coming off his big win at Mania, a Paul Heyman guy, Cesaro!
That's right.
Everyone booed. I laughed. That was awesome. By the way, we have discussed how terrible Cesaro's music is. Not that it matters much less, but his entrance video is also lame. It's just his name and, like, disco lights. So, we had a Money in the Bank qualifier. Cesaro versus Rob Van Dam. Crowd did not care about either guy. They said they wanted Lesnar. They never got him. Had a long, flat match. Even for Rob's comeback, was pretty dead crowd. And Cesaro won clean with a neutralizer. So, he is in the ladder match. Had a tweet from Randy Orton on his vacation.
This was awesome.
He was.
I need to do this next time I'm gone.
Just laying in your trunks, getting a tan.
Missing Wrestling Observer Radio tonight. That's what I'll say.
Mm-hmm. Michael Cole brought Seth Rollins down to the ring for a sit-down interview. Rollins shaved his neck, but otherwise, same beard, same hair. He wasn't a suit, but even the suit was all black. So basically looked like the same guy.
Well, it is the same guy.
Yeah.
That is an important point.
Yeah. So this guy who, last 7 days ago, we saw him in an act of betrayal, backstabbing, cowardly attacking his friends from behind. He got in the ring and he gave Cole a friendly handshake.
Sure.
I laughed. So he finally got his promo. He took credit for all of the Shield success. He said, left to his own devices, Ambrose would be face down in a ditch. I think everyone at home thought about it for 2 seconds and then kind of just nodded to themselves. He called Reigns the Golden Boy, but said all that fury was useless with nobody to channel it. He had the usual buzz lines about survive or adapting and evolving. Said the Shield were never his brothers. They were merely business partners. When he said believe in the Shield, what he really meant was believe in Seth Rollins. I thought his promo was awesome.
I thought he did a great job.
Yeah.
This was the most important promo of his career.
That is true.
And he pulled it off great.
He fantastic job.
He's always been a guy that, for some reason, there's a lot of people that thought Seth Rollins would be the odd man out. And they always gave him mic time. And he always did a great job.
Mm-hmm.
He always looked good in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got it. So, good for him.
Indeed. So, he noted that Reigns and Ambrose had threatened to kick his ass earlier. He dared them to come try. Out they came, but then the lights went out and the Wyatts appeared. Turned into a 4-on-2 brawl, and then John Cena ran out to sort of even the sides, and the heels ran away. So, Cena here volunteered to be their partner in the main event.
You know, going back to that that Randy Orton promo, or the tweet, he was, in fact, sitting there with no pants on, as usual.
That's true.
Which got me thinking that I hope that Randy goes on vacation in like December, because I want to see him tweet from like the wilds of Alaska and have like a full parka on.
Yes.
And the goggles and the fur and no pants.
I want to see him. Yes, exactly. I picture him skiing down the slopes at Aspen. Pantsless.
Exactly. No pants.
Yeah. All right.
You know what pisses me off about my ideas?
They're so great and you never get to see them?
Well, partly that, but it pisses me off because, like, they can do anything they want. It's fake. So don't even just use my ideas, but think about all the great ideas that you could do that you could do, but you don't. You know?
Sure.
I don't know.
Paige versus Alicia Fox. Oksana came out for no other reason other than to be there so Alicia could beat her up at the end. So, the match was fine. It wasn't great, but it was a perfectly fine wrestling match. But these fucking announcers. I need to start muting them during women's matches and turning music on or something. They do not care. They don't care if you know they care. They openly try to make you, the viewer, not care. Talking about mood rings and shit. Telling jokes, not paying attention to anything that happened in the ring whatsoever until Paige screamed. And then they laughed at her for screaming. Then Paige finally won with, and I quote, the modified scorpion cross lock that she calls the PTO Paige's tap out.
Yeah, that sucked.
His name is getting longer every week.
Infuriated me.
And then afterwards, yeah.
Go on.
Afterwards, Alicia beat up Oksana with popcorn and water, and it went forever.
It sucked.
Very lame.
Listen, I'm telling everybody. No matter what kind of goofy gimmick you give somebody, it will never get over long term if all they do is lose. I'm telling you. Alicia Fox, it was starting to kind of work, but she lost, and she lost, and she lost. And so nobody gives a fuck. And this will continue as long as she loses. By the way, don't let me forget when we're done with Raw that I've got to talk about William Howard Taft.
All right.
I'm reading an article here on Men's Health, and as I was trying to read it, a big fucking ad popped up. And whenever the ad pops up, the only way to get rid of it is to click something. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
And what you have to click is a thing that says, no thank you, I'm not interested in losing weight. They guilt you.
That's awesome.
Anyway, move on.
That's very awesome. Jack Swagger versus Santino. Santino cut an inset promo saying that Zeb Coulter should be deported back to hell.
Yeah.
So Swagger threw a tantrum at ringside, and Zeb slapped the hell out of him. And this fired Swagger up, and he pinned Santino with a doctor bomb. That was it.
That covers it.
Cody met with Goldust backstage. He promised a partner next week, someone Goldust had never seen before. Someone who would magnify the magnificence that is Goldust. Goldust's response to this was to put his face in his hands and mutter, oh, Lord.
Who could it be? Someone Goldust has never seen before, so it can't be somebody off the main roster.
I assume they're calling somebody up.
It's got to be like... Who's magnificent in NXT?
Tyler Breeze?
No, they ain't going to bring up Tyler Breeze for this.
Didn't say they should.
Aiden English.
I don't know if they should bring him up either.
Well, I'll talk about Aiden English later.
Helmsley's at a backstage meeting. Vicky came in, said there was no more Brad Maddox, no more Daniel Bryan. It's time to celebrate. She began to pour champagne, but she sneezed, and Steph slapped her and threw her out.
This segment was so stupid. Because Stephanie's big line was, I've fired you once, don't make me fire you again. Talk about getting over a firing stipulation.
Yeah.
You've been fired multiple times.
And we just keep hiring you back.
Yeah.
If we fire you again, we'll probably hire you again. So main event was Shield versus, Shield and John Cena versus the Wyatts. This was... I will cut to the chase. This was 5 great minutes after 20 very boring minutes. Match went forever. Most of it was just Ambrose being beaten up in the corner. Then he finally tagged out to Cena. And Cena ran wild for about a minute. And then he was also beat up in the corner. The only sustained heat in this match was actually dueling chants of "Let's go Cena" and "Cena sucks." And those chants came when Cena was standing in the apron minding his own business. So for a long time, this was very, very boring. And then Cena finally made the hot tag. And the key to this is he made the hot tag and then he vanished. And it was Reigns and Ambrose running wild, killing everyone, looking great. And the place went nuts. Everyone started hitting big moves. Luke Harper is awesome. I know we mention that every week, but it bears mentioning every week. Like I say, everyone hit big moves. And finally, Reigns pinned Harper with a spear. So Ambrose and Reigns essentially by themselves beat the Wyatts. Crowd by the end is chanting, "This is awesome." And the finish for the match is the biggest pop in the entire show. Hunter and Rollins were watching backstage. Very disapproving of this match. And then Cena finally returned to, I would say celebrate with the Shield, but it's not like they were buddy-buddy. They just kind of nodded at each other like, "Yep, we won." So that was that. And at the end of the day, all I can say about this show is they are doing their damnedest to try to get the Shield, or the guys who were in the Shield, over. And God bless them for that.
Yes, they are. Although at the end of the day, all that talk about how this would be the end of the Shield and then just, it wasn't. And we just move on. It wasn't even like a post-show angle or anything. Next week, I guess Hunter just has to do something diabolical.
Yes.
I presume, I would bet that the new Shield member, if there is one, would debut at the pay-per-view. If they're smart. That's what I would do. Speaking of presidents, I decided to find out who the fattest president of all time was. All right. We may have done this before, I think, but the answer is William Howard Taft. And maybe it's just because a lot of my friends are heavy, and there's a lot of heavy wrestling fans, and a lot of heavy wrestlers. But they describe him here, and I quote, "a staggering 340 pounds.
Well, if you weigh 340 pounds, you would probably stagger too.
It is not just, he's not just heavy, but his weight is staggering. It says here that for a new report in the journal Annals of Internal Medicine, Deborah Levine studied the letters exchanged between Taft and an English physician, Nathaniel E. York Davies. Taft, who according to legend once got stuck in the presidential bathtub because of his girth.
Ah, okay, he's the one I'm thinking of.
Requested a personalized weight loss plan, writing that, and I quote, "no real gentleman weighs more than 300 pounds. Where's Craig when I need him? Should be commenting on this. York Davies provided him with a program heavy on vegetables, fruits, and grilled lean proteins, and low on carbs and sugar.
What a revolutionary idea.
He lost 60 pounds.
What year was this?
This was, it does not say, but this would have been the late 1800s, I presume.
There you go, yes.
So there you go. Lost 60 pounds. He got down to 280, which I guess was not as staggering. The remaining five fattest commanders-in-chief include Grover Cleveland, who it does not give his weight. Oh, 240 to 280. That's the second fattest president of all time, was 240 to 280. Dwight Eisenhower, 172, is in third place. This should concern some of you. The third fattest president was 172 pounds. That can't be right. Can it?
When was this written?
Bill Clinton. Oh, I guess it's not in order.
Okay.
Bill Clinton was 230.
Yeah.
Really? Was he that big?
Bill Clinton?
I guess so.
I suspect if we went back, we would find his weight fluctuated a lot, but he was known for his love of fast food.
Well, you know, that's not good for you.
It's not.
And Teddy Roosevelt, 220 pounds. Warren G. Harding, 200 plus pounds. So there you go. Yeah, keep in mind that Bill Clinton, with his fast food diet, had a quadruple bypass surgery.
That's also true.
In 2004. and a heart stent replacement in 2010. So, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Today, he weighs what he did in high school, 30 pounds lost, with a protein and almond milk shake every morning and avoiding all meat, dairy, and eggs. How about that?
Very nice, very nice. All right. I've mentioned this on the show before, but a few years back, I have a cousin who's big into ancestry.
Yeah.
And I'll forget the other word now, but your family tree kind of stuff.
And genealogy.
Yeah, 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 that's it. And she, for Christmas one year, got the family a big, thick book where she did a biography on one of our ancestors. He was an attorney in the early days of Seattle.
And, this story.
Yes. And had, you know, photos, old family photos, and she actually went to visit his gravesite and took a picture, and here's when he moved here, here's when this person met here, here are some letters they wrote to each other. But the thing that always gets to me is that in this man's obituary, this, again, is like my great-great-great-uncle or something. But in his obituary, when he died, writing his lasting legacy, in the Seattle Times said that at one point he moved to Seattle and this is a quote, began to accumulate flesh rapidly. That was in print.
You know,
yeah.
Factual statement, I'm sure.
I'm sure it was.
Factual statement.
I'm sure it was.
Vinny has lost weight, everybody.
I'm a little smaller.
I asked if it was because of the wedding, and you said that, and to not die.
To not die, yes.
Wow. What do you weigh now?
I don't know what I weigh. I do know that I got fitted for my tux for the wedding in either January or February, and I went back in this weekend, and I was down one shirt and one jacket size.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, there you go. Let's play a quick song here, and then we'll continue on. I'm not even going to read what this is called. I'll just let you listen. Fabio, the long-haired model. He was on the cover of all those romance novels. You remember Fabio, Granny? Long-haired fella. Google him on the internet.
I have a picture in my mind, but I'm not sure if that's him.
Is he handsome?
Buongiorno.
Meet Fabio.
I'm Fabio.
Fabio. Meet.
And I'm very interested in what makes romance work.
Sometimes I'll see a Fabio. Meet.
I want to share with you my recipe for a perfect evening.
Fabio, there's no way.
An evening for two lovers.
Brian Alvarez and Big Vinny B.
When I plan a date, I want to make sure that everything is perfect for us.
Fabio, there's no way.
Music is the most important thing to set the mood for the night.
Fabio, meet.
When I play a special song, it's very important because it can express what I feel so perfectly.
Fabio, meet.
A song can speak for me when I cannot put my feelings into words.
That's a hell of an album.
Was that with the end?
That was an abrupt ending, yes.
I thought you cut it off.
No. You know, I was on Facebook. Actually, me and Whitney both have friends who met Fabio.
Oh, yeah.
One of my buddies posted a picture of him with Fabio. And one of Whitney's friends, I wish I had the post in front of me. I cannot remember the exact wording. But it's a picture of her and Fabio, and she said something like, it was the greatest day of my life, and she had a list of why. And among those were, he held me uncomfortably close, and he signed the large bucket of protein before I had time to tell him I wanted the small one.
Impressive.
What a fucking worker. Oh, you want to buy protein? Yeah, the big one. Sign it. God bless Fabio. All right. NXT.
Thank God for this show.
This is my favorite show every week.
It's not even close.
It's such a great show.
I mean, you mentioned it was better than Impact, which goes without saying. It was much better than Raw, and this is not a bad Raw.
I wasn't kidding. A few weeks ago when that Raw script leaked, a buddy of mine in WWE said, tell everybody you know to take this script, if they run a wrestling company, and just copy the formatting. And I'm not kidding. Like, you don't have to copy WWE, but what a fantastically formatted, simple, excellent wrestling show this is. It's so completely different from Impact that they're two different genres. This is a professional wrestling show. They only have a couple of angles. Actually, they have several angles, but they understand that, like, you can't make every fucking angle important. There are important angles you need to hit on this week, and there are other angles that you can slowly build towards. So in every segment here, there was something building to something. But at the end of the day, the ones they really hammered home were the ones that were really important right now. Because not every fucking thing is of equal importance. When you write a show like that, nothing gets over. Let's continue.
I think it also helps there was, and I mean this in the most positive way possible, there was less stuff in this 1 hour of NXT than in most 2 hour impacts. They don't overwhelm you with noise.
No. It's
just, here's a segment. They give it time to develop. When it's appropriate, the segment ends, and then they go on to the next one. They do not shoehorn 18 things into a 5-minute bit. So, it opened with a video recapping the events of TakeOver, including some of the post-match promos on the Fallout deal, whatever they called it. This was a great video, totally WWE quality. Their production crew, of course, is the best. They were sure to show Tyson Kidd at the end of the deal walking out on everyone, including his wife.
That's right. And again, not only was this better than any recap that TNA has ever done in their entire existence, but this was better than 95% of the WWE replays they do after big shows. They took all of the important stuff from TakeOver, they put it in a 1-minute video package, they hit all of the big main important points, and they made you feel like an idiot if you missed it.
Yes.
This was awesome.
That is certainly true. And that's important. That is more important for NXT because if Impact, and this is a ridiculous statement, but let's just pretend. If Impact opened with a video that made last week's episode of Impact look great, you as a viewer would be screwed. There's nothing you can do. But these guys, by making NXT TakeOver look great, made you think, I should go to the network and watch it.
That's right.
So, good stuff.
Not that anybody watched this show and not TakeOver, but still.
Also true. Or anyone watching this wasn't already a network subscriber. Mojo Rawley wrestled Aiden English in the opener. Mojo cut an inset promo saying that he had been knocked down at the pay-per-view, but just like the USA, when he got knocked down, he popped back up again. Then Aiden came out singing a song. The point of the song was that Mojo had failed the USA.
Mm-hmm.
He had let his country down.
That's right.
So they had a pretty basic TV match. It was fine. Mojo made his comeback, and he won with a sit-down splash.
I like Aiden English, but based on WWE history, I don't see him doing anything with this guy. He's too skinny. He's too pale. He doesn't have enough hair. And maybe the biggest problem, he looks too much like Antonio Cesaro, except Cesaro is far superior in every way, except singing. It's neat that
he
sings.
I've never heard Cesaro sing.
It's great that the guy sings. But, like, what else does he have? I mean, what can you do with a guy who the only thing he has that really stands out is that he sings? Someone else has the pale gimmick. We don't need a skinny guy. We don't need another Cesaro that's not as good in any particular, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I just don't. I that's why I mentioned his name with Goldust. I could see, like, Goldust comes to the ring, Aiden English comes out in a magnificent outfit, and he sings a magnificent song about Goldust, and then they lose the match, and we never see Aiden English again. I don't completely discount this possibility. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just making it up. But I could see it happening.
It's possible. It's possible. I think not everyone gets to be a main eventer. Not everyone gets to be a championship contender. I think Aiden English could be a low-card comedy guy.
Another Damian Sandow. Exactly, another Santino.
I was going to say Fandango, actually.
But another Fandango.
Yes.
We got a million of these geeks.
Another Fandango. They showed Tyson walking past his wife again, and they showed the crowd calling him a crybaby, and Renee interviewed Natalya.
Boy, are you, it's Devin, by the way. and you're greatly downplaying this.
I do that every time. Amazing. I think I've been calling her Renee for months.
So Devin and Natalia are like two trains in the night. It's not like they're standing together getting ready for the interview. It's like they cut to backstage and these two people just kind of run into each other. And as they run into each other, Devin's spitting out a question. And Natalia briefly answers, she'll always have Tyson's back.
Yeah.
And then she just rushes off. And then Devin turns and looks at the camera and looks pretty. And they pause there for a second and they cut away. The most hilariously useless interview. But you know what? It was short. It was quick. They got over when they needed to get over and they were gone. Great.
Indeed. Charlotte versus It's Bailey. Bailey's entrance video on the sides has anime style portraits of herself.
Yeah.
It's awesome. She gave out some headbands.
She's got inflatable balloon men now.
Inflatable balloon men. She gave out headbands to some Special Olympians. So during this match, Charlotte tried to smother her amateur style in a very ridiculous cartoonish manner.
The most horrendous float over attempts by both ladies.
Yeah, well, Charlotte, I could get because you were supposed to be making fun of Bailey's bad offense, but still.
I thought they were trying to one-up each other, and I think it was Regal said it looked like she's on a slip and slide, which was the most perfect explanation of this that I could come up with.
Yeah, yeah. So, Bailey made her comeback. She stopped to level Sasha on the floor, but then Charlotte cut her off, but then Summer made a big return to distract everyone. And Bailey attempted to win with a backslide, but Charlotte escaped, hit a horrible dropkick to the knee, then went with her facebuster. And then Summer got in the ring to celebrate with Sasha and Charlotte. They were both confused at first, but then Summer started beating up Bailey, so they figured, all right, we'll do that. And all three girls started beating up Bailey, and then out came Emma and Paige, who is still appearing on NXT.
That's right.
She ran out to make the save. So Bailey was so happy to have friends at the end of this. She got to her feet, dusted herself off, and she realized that Emma was there and Paige was there because they liked her, and that meant the world to her.
She was
so thrilled. Bailey is fantastic.
I didn't hate Bailey nearly as much as usual. The dancing balloon men really helped. And she was so happy to see her friends.
Yeah.
And just you know
to
what?
Have friends.
You know what? We had six women in the ring, and for the most part, they all liked their friends.
Yeah.
Great. Although the storyline is that Charlotte and Sasha don't really like Summer, but Summer doesn't get it yet.
Yeah.
Summer still thinks she's one of the BFFs.
Yeah.
But you know what? No one is yelling and screaming and bitching at each other.
Yes.
Awesome. Two teams.
Teams are good. Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger were backstage.
I think this sucked.
They were rapping.
This should have been cut.
And I think the gimmick is that Ty is white and has no rhythm. It was not funny. It was stupid. Not everything in the show is great. Then we had an Ascension hype video. Then we had a match I am not making up.
Yeah.
Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger.
Yes.
Versus Stuart Cumberland and Philip Gouljar. And if you think I am mispronouncing Philip Gouljar's name, you didn't watch the show.
No.
Because the announcers said it exactly like that, Philip Gouljar, every single time, and were making jokes about how that's what you would keep your jam in on Halloween, a jar full of ghouls. Gouljar.
I actually thought it was Mike Cumberland.
I could have sworn
the point is, it doesn't matter. This was old school great jobbers. Goofy names,
yeah.
Simple gear, average physiques, and they get their asses kicked.
Thinning hair. Actually, they didn't get their asses. Well, they sold for a while, but this was not a squash.
They briefly got some
offense.
They
got the heat on Ty Dillinger.
Yeah. Ty Dillinger was on fire tonight. Like all of the awesome little things that you see a great worker do.
They were even mentioning how Jordan's the better athlete, but Dillinger's the more polished wrestler right now.
Yes.
Which is a fact.
It is a fact. And I thought that he was exceptional during this match. He was so good that this match went on forever. And I, honest to God, should have gotten bored, but I didn't. And I attribute that to Dillinger. I thought that Jason Jordan is like, he's a great athlete. He was a great wrestler. They've given him Kurt Angle's finish.
Yeah.
Which they're calling the Jordan Slam.
Very original.
Very original name.
He won with the Jordan Slam, which looked just like Kurt Angle's Angle Slam. And then his music sounds a lot like Kurt Angle's too.
That's right. This guy, they got something with this Jason Jordan guy.
He looks great.
He looks great.
He can wrestle.
He's big. He's tall. He can wrestle. Good background. This guy will be something. Although he did try to give, I believe, Cumberland, it may have been Ghoul Jar.
It was Ghoul Jar.
Was it Ghoul Jar?
He nearly died in this match.
Jason Jordan goes to give Philip Ghoul Jar a backdrop, and Philip Ghoul Jar could not decide if he wanted to land on his belly or on his back.
So he compromised.
He compromised.
And chose the top of his head.
Landed right on his head. A terrible landing.
I was watching this. Bridget was watching television. I was watching this on my computer.
That was the scariest thing I've ever seen right there with R-Truth. Did you see that?
Even scarier than Philip Ghoul Jar landing on his head. Bridget was watching television. I was watching NXT on my computer with headphones. And that move happened and I just shrieked.
Oh, yeah. So did a bunch of people in the crowd.
Yeah. So he lived, thankfully.
And that's not good.
Yeah, Jordan won.
Here's my prediction, everybody. Jason Jordan and Ty Dillinger will be the next NXT Tag Team Champions. Take that to the bank.
The tag team division right now is exactly three teams deep, and one of those teams contains Philip Ghoul Jar.
Hey, don't downplay Ghoul Jar.
I do not see Philip Ghoul Jar as championship material. Maybe it's just
what
me.
What the hell's wrong with you? No eye for talent.
The BFFs reunited backstage. Charlotte was still a little miffed that Summer had interrupted her this evening, but Summer was clueless to this. And Summer bragged about all she had been doing through wrestling all over the world, starring in Hollywood movies, spreading the BFF's name everywhere.
By the way, I just want to mention that I love the name, the Spectacular Legacy of the AWA. That's what they came up with.
Yes.
Go on.
At this point, this has been a fun show, and then here's where it turned around and became classic. Everything after this was great. Tyler Breeze came out for a promo. As he was cutting this promo, he was filming himself with a cell phone, and the video was on the screen. He bragged about beating Sami Zayn at TakeOver. Said this made him the top contender to the NXT title. Said that title was pristine, should only be worn by someone who is pretty like himself. He said he got to choose when he got his title match, and until then, he was going to keep Adrian Neville on his toes. And after this intro, he finally showed his new music video.
Which I believe has been titled, My Music Video.
First of all, anything with wrestlers in their gear, interacting with normal humans in a normal environment, money.
Yes.
Tyler Breeze going into the recording studio in his gear with all the producers or whatever in there, saying, these lyrics are genius. I wrote them. Awesome. So, we talked about the song, I'm sure, on the TakeOver show, but it's himself rapping about how gorgeous he is. There's all sorts of sound effects and techno and stuff, and it finally ends. The crowd is chanting, that was awesome. Tyler was moved to tears by his own greatness, and then he gave himself a standing ovation.
Yes.
This was the best self-promotion I've seen since the glory days of the Heartthrobs in Ohio Valley.
It was everything I love about, I don't even know what I would call it. I can't call it independent pro wrestling. It's not really old school pro wrestling because it's 2014 and it's brand new. But that's really what it is. A heel doing something preposterous that he thinks is just so awesome.
Yes.
It will if this planet is around in 5,000 years and they're still pro wrestling, this will still be awesome.
Yes.
Guys will still be doing this.
This was, you take a talented, creative, charismatic person, you give them a camera crew, you say, make something entertaining, and then you stand back. And that's what they got. And it was great.
And he was, in fact, in his gear in the studio.
Yes.
You know, I was once looking for interviews with Helsing Gracie, who is the second oldest son of Elio Gracie, and he's the crazy one. He's the one that has been in like 9 million street fights. His self-defense, like all the Gracies show Gracie self-defense, and his self-defense is often like mule kick the guy right in the face. Mm. He's just a complete madman. So I just wanted to hear some interviews with this guy because he's got great stories. So I found this interview that he'd done on the radio. Now, we have a radio station up here. It's 97.3. And they've got a video feed of the studio. And if you ever go up there and like look at the numbers of people that actually watch the video feed, it's very few. Probably like 80 are watching on any given day. I mean, nobody watches the video, but they have it. That's what this radio studio had. So this was not a video interview. But for those few people that wanted to actually see the interview as it was taking place, you could. So the point of the story is, Helson Gracie showed up for a radio interview wearing nothing but his gi. Mm. I died. He goes everywhere in his gi. He couldn't show up in street clothes. He showed up in the studio for a radio interview with his gi on. That's hardcore. Just like Tyler Breeze. Furry boots, furry jacket, singing his song. Awesome segment.
Yep. So speaking of awesome videos...
This was the best thing I have ever seen.
You recall that last week, Bo Dallas left NXT.
Yes.
And there were some clips of him losing his match and throwing a tantrum and getting angry at the fans, telling them they stink and that they should leave.
Yes.
That's all we saw last week.
This was the death of WCW revised and expanded edition. That's what it was. We got the director's cut.
I guess so. So there was, in fact, the expanded edition, the director's cut. They showed it opened with Bo telling the fans they stink and they should leave. And then he walked backstage.
Actually, first it was a victory video.
That's true.
Then it showed him losing.
Yes, it showed basically the whole story of Bo Dallas start to finish. And he told the fans they stink, they should leave, and he walked backstage. And when he walked backstage, the music in the music video stopped.
Yes.
And they showed the crowd just sitting there. And then Bo walked back out, and the music rallied, and they showed all the fans standing up. And he kept warning them to go. It was time to go home. He threatened to call the police. He walked backstage, and the music stopped. Then he walked back out, and the music came up, and he said, "All right, the police are not coming.
But I'm going to call campus security.
I will call campus security. Go home."
This was so great.
It was better than anything Bo Dallas ever actually did when he was actually in NXT.
This was so great. This was what I really just decided this is the best show of all time. This was so great that when I watched it, all I could think was, I would so love to go to an NXT show. These fucking lucky bastards that get to go to these NXT shows at Full Sail University, like every time they do a taping, and they can go every single time. I mean, man, what a life. This would be great. I'm not going to move to Florida, but if I lived in the area and I could go to like every single one of these NXT shows, I would never miss one. This looked like so much fun. And meanwhile, we have Frankie Kazarian on the show today, and I ask him the obvious question, how come when AJ Styles is on a TNA show, it draws 400? But when AJ Styles is on an independent show, it draws 1,600. Isn't that kind of a weird fact?
It sure is.
TNA had the house shows this weekend that drew like 200 people with like Bully Ray on the card. Bully Ray, had he gone and main evented House of Hardcore, you know how many fans they drew? A fucking shit ton more than 200.
The amazing clips of the baseball stadium show they did.
Oh my God.
I swear to the Lord above that ICW, Tim Flowers Promotion, once did a baseball stadium show, and I promise you we drew more than that.
Dude, I guarantee it. I guarantee that you and I in our hair match outdrew probably 5 of the last 6 TNA house shows. That's a fact. That is a fact. It's just like sickening. And meanwhile, the point of this is I watch this show and little videos like this. Man, if they were coming to my town, I wouldn't even try to get a comp. I would go and buy a front row fucking ticket to watch this show. It just looks like so much fun.
And then we had the main event, which was the best thing on the show. It was Justin Gabriel versus Adrian Neville. An excellent match. Here's the story. Now, bear with me. This is complicated, and I don't want you to fall behind.
Yes.
What you had here was two super athletic, highly skilled, ultra-competitive athletes, and they both wanted to win this match really bad. So bad that when simple mat-based tactics did not work, they resorted to high-risk dives, throwing caution to the wind in an attempt to gain victory. What a mind-blowing concept.
It's shocking. And people cared.
People.
That's what's most astonishing.
This is the key. They wanted to win this match really bad. They did not want to show off moves. They were attempting to gain victory. It was awesome. They were into every near fall. Not even the near fall. Just every shift in momentum. It meant something. This guy's now closer to the win. And the guy who was closer to the win knew this. And he'd let the fans know. Ha ha, I've got the advantage now. So awesome. So eventually, Neville won clean with the red arrow. Tyson Kidd, they came out. He admitted he had acted like a fool after their match at TakeOver. He deserved to be called a crybaby by the fans. He said, like a true Canadian, he was sorry. That's my favorite Canadianism. That's exactly what he said, too. And finally, he said, yes, Neville had beaten him, but he would not be able to do it again, and he challenged Neville to a rematch. And Neville, being a true fighting champion, accepted, and they shook hands. And that was it.
Yep.
Getting a rematch. If I was in charge, somehow, and I don't know how, but somehow this has ended up with Kidd, Neville, and Gabriel all earning mutual respect and just forming an undersized international ass-kicking faction.
Well, that's not going to happen.
I know it wouldn't, but so great together.
You know,
the show was great, and you should all watch it.
I really don't want to keep talking about and make comparisons to Impact, but you know what? This show is in the same building every single time.
Yes.
They tape 4 shows a day when they do their tapings. That is 4 hours of television that they tape, and the crowd is there the whole entire time. If you want to try to claim that people don't care about wrestling, or people don't care about simple storylines, they need complexity, they need talking, they need writing, then you produce a television show like that where people actually care and they make noise, and it appears that you are driving them to go to your shows and stay tuned to the television program throughout the entire 2-hour duration and everything else that goes with being a successful company, and then I will listen to you. But right now, what TNA is doing is causing none of these things to happen. Meanwhile, NXT is doing a lot of things that a lot of people would say you really can't do in 2014. Nobody wants to watch long matches. You can't have a short guy with a funny nose and a mouthpiece as your champion doing nothing but long wrestling matches in the main event. You can't have a guy like Tyson Kidd, you know, as your main eventer or any of these guys. Justin Gabriel. But you know what? I watch it every week. The people are into it. The show is fun. I love this show. I love this show. Hopefully this Thursday show doesn't suck. I'm counting on it being good. But for those asking, yes, on Thursday, from now on, it's going to be the Granny segment followed by the NXT review. And yes, we will be adding some other stuff over the course of the week to make up for Impact. So tonight we were supposed to review the Clash of the Champions, but we're going to wait for Craig to get back. So that'll be next week. And then on Sunday, we will do Ring of Honor, SmackDown, and something else from the network. Maybe we'll watch a countdown or whatever. I've had a lot of requests for other things, so those will be taken into consideration as well. Somebody suggested the Chikara Rebirth, so I will put that into consideration. And some New Japan, a lot of other stuff as well. So I will fill the void, everybody. Don't worry about it. There will be plenty of stuff without having to worry about Impact. So let's play one more song, and then we shall wrap it up.
Hey, yo.
All of June is my birthday.
I'm Stuart.
I'm the Boogeyman, and I'm coming to get you.
Ah.
Yeah!
The Beam Show.
Slightly to the left. Slightly to the left.
Chairs, tables, and ladders.
Hey, yo.
All of June is my birthday.
I'm Struth.
No, you weren't invited. Oh, you're not kidding. It was so one-sided.
Man, what a great reminder that all of June is my birthday. And what better present to get me than to go to the front page of WrestlingObserver.com, scroll down to that Death of WCW graphic, click through, and pre-order your copy of Death of WCW. We had a lot of shows the last couple of days for you to check out. An hour with Dave doing a Q&A on Chael Sonnen failing a drug test. Had a great show with Kazarian. If you want to know how bad things are in TNA, listen to that show with Kazarian. He'll tell you all about him. As well as Wrestling Observer Radio. This program will be back tomorrow with more. And it should be a good time. So check it out, everybody. We'll talk to you again after a while.
Adios.